welcome to
the Plant-Based Podcast.
In case you didn't know already, plants are amazing. You can
eat them,
wear them,
drink them,
nourish your skin with them,
grow them,
love them,
and be inspired by them. So why not join us on the Plant-Based Podcast as we speak to the movers, shakers, and growers in this amazing plant world.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Natural Grower. Launched in 2019, their award-winning liquid fertilizer and soil conditioner is made entirely from maize. Visit naturalgrower.co.uk to nurture your soil and boost your plants and veg. Enter PBP15 for a 15% discount as a PBP subscriber.
Everyone, I'm very excited. We have just so many amazing people on the podcast at the moment. So, today we're with Mark Lane.
Hello,
Mark.
Hello.
I'm sure our listeners will all already know who you are.
They're probably all thinking, who the hell is that?
No way.
Not if they're Gardeners World fans, and we know a lot of people are. It's a big hitter on a Friday night.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
That's true. They will know you from Gardeners World.
Yeah.
But just in case anyone doesn't watch Gardeners World, and we can't imagine who doesn't watch
it. If they do, well, what can we say?
But you do have a piece on Gardeners World, don't you? And you do lots of writing and all kinds of things as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But what we want to do, because we always start the podcast off with getting to know you better.
Yep.
And we always ask this question: how did you get into gardening in the first place?
It's always a good question. So I grew up in an apartment. So we didn't really have a garden of our own, but we had a communal space outside. And it was just lawn and shrubs. And, you know, gardeners used to come in once a week, look after it, and that was it. And I was probably around about the age of 7. And my grandparents had very large gardens. So one of them, on the maternal side, it was all roses. It was always a rose garden. And as kids, we used to have to go and pick up all the grotty leaves and all this sort of thing. And we used to hate it. But my other grandparents on my paternal side had a large garden with a huge veggie patch, lots of flowers, and my nan used to do floral arranging. So we always used to be outside whenever we used to go there. But back at the apartment, about age 7, I said to my mum one day, can we go down and can we just sort of plant up something in that bed? Because it looks a bit sorry and sad. Mm-hmm. And she was like, yeah, go on then, why not? Let's go out and buy some plants. So we did. Uh-huh. And within a year, there was only 8 apartments, but within a year, every single person had their own little bit of the garden that they were looking after.
That's amazing.
And they were planting their own things. Wow. And people would be out there chatting, talking.
That's so nice.
And I mean, this was back in the 70s. But it had changed the way that people looked at this space, even to the point where they even said at one stage, let's not get the gardeners coming in anymore. We can do it all ourselves. And we did. We looked after it all ourselves.
So two things for me have come out of what you've just said. Firstly, almost everybody who we speak to will say that their love of gardening started when they were a child.
Yep.
Almost everybody. Even if it's, you know, stopped halfway through, you know, teens, 20s, kind of not done it and then got back into it in their 30s, 40s, whatever. But there's always something that's come from learning or being around plants as a child.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is what you were just saying, you know, you decided that you were just going to plant up one little area.
Yep.
But then as soon as there are plants, people kind of are drawn to them and they want to be there, they want to do something. And plants have that power, don't they, to kind of bring community and people together.
They do. I think it's just that whole notion of being, you know, being out there, having a chat with someone, not really noticing that time's flying by, getting your hands in the soil and having a really good time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You're absolutely right, plants do that.
Yeah,
and it's such a great thing, and why not?
Yeah.
And we should be doing more of it, let's face it.
Well, it seems so ahead of its time, because now we're into community gardens like the next big thing, but obviously you were doing it way back.
Thank you.
Do you think that got... No, but you know what I mean. Come on, you already said the 70s yourself.
Yeah, exactly, I know.
But do you think we kind of lost community gardens like in the 80s and the 90s?
Yeah, they were, really, because it was all about really money in the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah,
and
true.
No one really cared about community gardens.
Yeah.
And it's only, I would say, sort of in the late 90s, sort of early 2000s, that we started to really start looking into it again.
Okay.
And I think that's also as a result of the fact that the 80s and the 90s were also so money-led that lots and lots of people were starting to have mental health issues. People were coming isolated because they weren't really going out and doing stuff. They were just working. And because of that, we're now having this backlash, and we're sort of thinking, crikey, we need to do something. And we need to change people's perception. And if we can do it, and we know the health benefits that gardening can do for people. And, you know, I'm living proof of that. I think it's great that we are, that we're growing. I'm pleased that we've started to sort of introduce more community gardens and pocket parks and the like all across the country.
And I think that goes hand in hand with the wellbeing side and the climate change as well. You know, so we've got kind of two things that are really pushing gardening forward.
And sustainability and the whole plastic thing. You know, there's so much now, and I think that whether it's the RHS, whether it's Gardeners World, whoever it might be, everyone's realised that we need to do something about it. And I find it fascinating because I find, especially when I'm meeting people, that it's a lot of sort of late teens, early 20-year-olds who are really, really concerned about what's happened to the planet. And obviously it's their future. And obviously when their kids, their future. And, you know, for, you know, my grandparents and my parents' age have really just used the world as a trash can. And it's such a shame.
Good digital detox as well.
Exactly.
Okay, but let's kind of stick in your childhood. So what did you do next then? Because you were quite artistic as well. But what did you do when you left school? You weren't working in plants straight away, were you?
No, I wasn't, no. So I left school and I did a History of Art degree at University College London. It was always between art and music. So I was a flautist at school and always loved art. But then went into History of Art. Absolutely thoroughly enjoyed it. But what was great about that was it really, there's the whole thing about composition, about colour, about texture in planting, and even in just in pictures and sculpture. And I was really into 1980s sculpture at the time. And just that whole notion of how an object within a space and the space around it, and how you think about those spaces and the objects, and how someone interrelates with those things. Which now, obviously, looking back, I use the whole time now in my garden and everything. So there was all of that. And then left university, and as you do, left university, didn't know what I was going to do. And I was initially going to become an art therapist. And it was something that I wanted to do, but I had to wait another 3 years because I had to go through psychotherapy myself in order to become a therapist at the end of it. And of course, after university, debts, I'm thinking, crikey, I need to pay something off. And I actually got into publishing, but it was in medical publishing. And don't ask me how, I have no idea how I got into
it. So many people just fall into something, don't they? Just the job.
So my topics were obstetrics and gynecology, psychiatry, neurosurgery, neurosurgery, and urology.
What?
I know, tell me about it.
Oh my gosh.
So I was there for 3 years, loved it. I got to the point where I was correcting doctors, and I was thinking to myself, if I'm correcting the doctors, something's wrong, or maybe I should be getting out of this field, and it just didn't feel right. And then I went into art publishing, which I loved. But then I was headhunted to go back into medical publishing, so I did that.
back and forward.
What a portfolio career, and I don't even see a sign of being a Bonariensis
Then I was headhunted to become the publishing director for the Royal Institute of British Architects. Now, whilst I was there, it was great because I was talking with architects, but also landscape architects. And it was around this sort of time as well that obviously I was with my partner Jason, and we had bought our own place and we had our own garden. And I was more interested about the sort of the outside space in relation to the architecture and how it all related. So it all started to sort of build up. Then I was headhunted again to go back into arts publishing to be the managing editor for Thames and Hudson, the lovely big glossy table books. And we did many gardening books. And it was brilliant because we worked with people like Christopher Lloyd, you know, loads and loads of different people. And it was just such great fun. And the books are absolutely stunning. I also took it on my back. There was a book we did on tropical trees, which was written by this octogenarian who lived in no, it's called completely blank, but basically the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And she was with the diplomat service, and she traveled all over the place, and in her journeys she would be writing about tropical trees. And I took it off my back and I wrote and edited this with her. And again, that sort of got me really, really hooked, and I was thinking there's something here. And then unfortunately, car accident happened in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And went to a very dark place, didn't know what to do. My publishing house was absolutely brilliant. They said, no, you can keep coming back, you know, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, I don't want to do that commute every single day. I don't know if I really want to do this anymore. And we sort of built up the garden at home, and we got done it really lovely, and it was looking really beautiful, and lots of flowers and everything. And Jason just said to me, look, you know about plants. You've got an encyclopedic brain for plants. You know about design because of all your arts, of your art schools and all this sort of thing. Why don't you put the two together and do something with it?
Yeah.
And I said,
get on, Jason.
And I was like, maybe, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And then one day, whilst throughout the rehabilitation, he basically almost shoved me outside the back door, got me into the garden. And for 10 minutes, I completely forgot about the pain. Mm. I forgot about the stresses, the tension, absolutely everything. And all I could feel was the sun on my face and the breeze as well.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's something in this.
Yeah. There you go. It's everything we speak about. And that was it.
Exactly. And then that was it. And then it was like, okay, so now I've got trained to become a garden designer. So I went traipsed around colleges. And I was.
But you already had the artistic edge to it there anyway.
There was. So, yeah. And in addition to that, I was reading plant book after plant book after plant book. And I was just absorbed. I just absorbed all this information. But I was, at the time, I was quite shocked at the lack of access for people at colleges.
Mm-hmm.
I was even told by some tutors, well, how are you even going to manage things like site surveys? How would you dig a hole if you needed to dig a hole? And I'm like, well, there are things like laser measures and everything else you can use, mm-hmm. but also I can ask someone to dig a hole, but I can dig a hole myself.
Yeah.
So I was a bit shocked by that.
Yeah.
So eventually I found an online course through KLC, and it's a 3-year course, passed in 18 months. And
I wish I absorbed plant names as easily as that.
And that was it, and I haven't looked back since.
Amazing.
So sort of around late 2002, 2003, started designing gardens, and garden design business took off. And
incredible.
That was it.
What a journey.
I know.
Ups and downs.
Yeah.
That's amazing, yeah. And you'd say you really enjoy the job you do now? The most?
Yeah.
That's obvious from your face. Anyway.
Yeah.
So absolutely love every single thing about it.
Wow.
And it's helped with your mental health as well.
Yeah, mental and physical health.
Yeah.
I mean, my mood's really lifted. Physically, it's, you know, it keeps my upper body sort of strong and everything like that. And yes, of course, there are days where I sort of think, oh, do I really want to get out of bed? But I think lots of people are a bit like that.
Absolutely,
And, you know, whilst I was, I had a long stint when I was doing my rehabilitation at Stanmore, Royal Orthopaedic Hospital, and there was a horticultural therapist there. And one day she nabbed me almost, and she said, "Why don't you come outside?" And I didn't really want to go, and I did. And she got me to just sew. I think it was Spiraxis or something. I can't remember what it was.
Nice.
Exactly. Just into a little pot. And I did it all from a bed. And I did that. And we put it by the side. And I just watched these things grow.
Oh.
And it was magical. It was like magic in a pot for me. So again, it was sort of like, I know it's a coin, a real, what's the word I'm looking for? So I could complete blank.
Right.
Corny. I know it's really corny to say, but it's almost like these little seeds were sort of sown throughout my life, and then suddenly they've sort of grown up until now. Now I can sort of enjoy the plant.
And that's what gardening does. All these little processes and how you go about, you know, sowing and thinning out and potting on and hardening off and growing, like that process can be linked to us as humans, you know, how we grow in ourselves and how we need to know nurture ourselves. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't go so well, you know, when one of your plants dies because it's not very happy, you know, but then the next one grows, you know, and it's kind of like that ups and downs of life. And we're so similar to the processes, and you can use that to help yourself.
Very much so. There's a real symbiosis.
Yeah.
And it's actually
you put that more succinctly than me.
It's the sort of thing where, you know, people come up to me and they say, why is it that some of my plants die and some of them don't? I'll sort of say to them, well, you know, think about your plants as children. And if you fed them and you watered them too much, they would become big and floppy or wouldn't, you know, and drown
so well.
Or possibly and be so well. So I said, think of your plants like that. Look, care for them like your children. It's right.
But you can care for plants too much. Everybody overwaters houseplants, don't they?
Yeah.
Because you've said that, I must tell you something. Oh. I've left my husband in charge of my houseplants while I'm here. We haven't got that many in the apartment. And I said, I've left you instructions of when you need to water them. And he kind of went, oh. And I said, well, it's only like once every 2 weeks. He went, oh, I thought it would be once every other day. I was like, hang on a minute here. Yeah. Have you ever seen me watering our plants once every 2 days?
I guess if you're not interested, you don't notice that stuff, do you?
True.
My partner's got a reminder on his phone to know when to water the plants. But, I've heard of partners actually getting in a muddle and watering faux plants. Because if you don't know plants, you can't tell the difference. If you're really not into it, like, you know, I'm not a plumber, I wouldn't understand a pipe. Really weird analogy, but good night. But tell us about your garden at home. What's that like?
So, we've got just under an acre.
Mm-hmm.
And I've the house is in the middle.
Yeah.
And I've broken it all up into sort of different zones, not really garden rooms, but just sort of different zones, so I can play with colour, play with texture. So I've got a little herb garden, got a blue and yellow border, got white borders, got an ornamental grass border, got roses, peonies and hydrangeas as a nod to my grandparents.
Oh, and very artistic.
Very artistic,
as well.
Of course. Then it goes through into a little mini orchard where we just leave the lawn grass to grow tall, and we've planted marshes and lilies and things and that in there.
It sounds beautiful and like we really need to visit.
And
for lunch.
And then we've got a long border around the back of the garden, which is about probably about 20, 30 metres long by 10 metres at its deepest.
Wow.
It's a big border. And I love it. And then there's a little vegetable area. Well, we now only grow soft fruits and a double greenhouse.
That's incredible.
Cool.
This sounds like a dream garden.
It's a lovely space to have. There's always things to do, as Joe could probably tell you.
We should say, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Because your gardener's here, sat next to you.
Joe.
Joe was being ultra quiet, but I can see you like nodding sometimes.
Well, nice behaviour.
Like you want to say, you're welcome. I do see a lot of your photographs on social media, on Twitter and such like, and they're so beautiful. You are keen photographer as well, aren't
I do,
you?
I love it. I mean, it's one way for me just to keep a diary of the garden, and then I sort of take notes and see what doesn't work and what needs to go in there in its place.
Yeah.
But I just love also just capturing beautiful plants and beautiful combinations.
Mm.
And it's my sweetie shop, is the way I describe my garden, because I'm always going out there and I'm always not really tasting, but I'm always trying to experiment. Yeah, mate, some of them, yeah. But we've just taken out huge hedging down our driveway. Which has opened the garden up, but it means I've got this lovely big space now for double borders all the way down the side, all the way down it.
Oh, Joe, lots of work for you.
Already started.
Are you feeling twitchy?
Constant state of nervousness. Yes.
Joe's brilliant. You just give her an instruction and she'll go off and do it. She's very, very good. Very meticulous.
Awesome. This is good for your CV.
Exactly. And it's great because I mean there are certain things I can't do. Obviously, I try and do as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
I garden from my bottom most of the time. Just drag myself across the floor.
Yeah.
Do it that way. Long-handled reach pruners, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, when a border is in full growth, I can't get into the middle.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So obviously, that's where Joe's actually really helped.
Yeah.
Because Jason, my partner, does not like gardening whatsoever.
Isn't that so funny?
And he works for me as well.
It's always the way. But do you think, I often think if both of you are really into plants, you probably start to get a bit annoyed about each other. I don't know, it's then a bit too much, isn't it?
Well, you want to do one thing in the garden and he doesn't. Yeah. Maybe it's best that way.
True. He's learning. Initially, everything was a cabbage to him. But he is learning.
This is good.
Yeah.
The influence is working.
Exactly.
We, us gardeners, have to just keep on with it. You know, never stop. Just keep on. Anyway, thank you so much. In part two, we will be back and we will talk a little bit more about your disability and gardening as well for the less able body.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Natural Grower. Visit naturalgrower.co.uk to nurture your soil and boost your plants and veg.
So, Mark, we're up to part two, and you're very well known as a presenter on BBC Gardeners World, and we wanted to talk to you particularly about how your disability kind of affects how you garden and how you've kind of found workarounds, any products you recommend as well, and kind of just get a story of the bigger picture of how a gardening day looks like to you and how you do get the jobs done.
I mean, it's a question that people always ask me, and I always say to people that really disability is the secondary thing and gardening is the first thing. Because no matter what someone's level of ability, there's always a gardening chore that they can do, whether it's just pricking out, whether it's planting something, whatever it might be, there's always something.
And terribly therapeutic.
And terribly therapeutic, exactly. For me personally, it means, I sort of hoik myself out of my wheelchair, get onto my bottom, and I do most of my garden from down there. But that's more because I like being close to the plants, I also like being close to the soil, I like to see the way things are growing, I like to see the way that the soil's interacting with the plants. So I really love seeing that whole sort of process. But I always say to people, the main thing to do is to think about what you can actually do physically yourself inside the house. So what I mean by that is that some people can only stretch a certain distance, some people might not be able to twist their torso, some people may not be able to kneel, some people might not be able to lean forward. Start thinking about all of that, and then that will sort of dictate what it is you can or can't do in the garden, or how you might have to reinvent what you do in order to get around it. Then I would say to people, take it in bite-sized chunks. Don't ever think that you're going to get everything done in a day. Lists are great, but also a little timer. So I have a little timer on my phone, or you can use an egg timer or whatever. Set it for 20 minutes. Do some gardening for 20 minutes. Stop for another 10. Have a cuppa. Go out again and then do 20 minutes.
We all just try and do too much.
We do. We try and pile it on, and it's way too much.
And lists are great, but they're also pressure on yourself.
They are. Aren't they?
You can be a slave to a to-do list.
You can. But it's just about sort of breaking it, especially if you've got a physical disability, you can get tired quite quickly. So it's really just about manageable bites that you can actually do. There's also some great tools out there now. So, I mean, obviously, I keep trying all different things that I possibly can. There's sort of great sort of long-handled shears with long blades, which are brilliant because I use them to cut down perennials, cut down grasses, cut hedges. People who have difficulties, especially with sort of grip, with secateurs, the ones that have sort of like the twisty handles, are really, really, really great for that.
Like the ratchet mechanism, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. But then also there's the wonderful attachments you can get that just attach onto normal tools. And they're brilliant for people who can't twist their wrists. And also it keeps the arm in a more natural position. And they literally have clamps, and they just clamp onto a trowel or a fork, wherever it is, and then you can garden away.
I've seen some that go on the ends of wheelbarrows, and they kind of like twist up, so you can move your arms and wrists in a different way.
So you're not sort of twisting your body. It just naturally moves. And it's... But then you can break it right down and go very, very simple. I mean, from my seated position, obviously, always getting down to the soil, just bending down is difficult. If I want to plant a seed, what do I do? So I literally get a broom handle with the end off.
Yeah.
And sort of make a little divot into the soil.
Yeah.
I then have a blue bit of pipe.
Yeah.
And then have the blue of pipe, put it over the thing, drop the seed down the tube, into there, and then cover it back up.
You did some bulbs.
Yeah, doing the same thing
as
with bulbs.
I think it's got to be a small bulb because bigger bulbs, it matters if they then land the wrong way up, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Exactly.
The smaller ones, it doesn't matter.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's a great little tip. And you can do that even when you're standing. So if you have back problems, just use a long piece of tube, and then that way you can still do it.
So it's just thinking about what you're capable of and looking around you at all the kind of things that you've got and trying to make something that fits
exactly
what you
that.
Need. Like,
I've got a
amazing.
Lovely little caddy that I take around with me, which has all the tools in that I'm going to need.
Yeah.
And also, I always say to people, when you're in the garden, remember, take a bottle of water with you, take sunscreen with you, wear a hat if it's on a sunny day, and just have that all inside this little caddy or a box, and you've got it there. So you're not having to keep going in and out of the house. You've got it there right when you need it.
Yeah. Very good tips.
That really is. What about kind of picking up stuff like leaves? Because I've seen a big... almost like a rake that's in a pair, that's like a pair of scissors.
Yep.
Have you seen that? I don't know what it's called.
Yeah,
that looks really cool.
I don't know what they're called either, really. They're just like, they're like a big pair of hands. And they are, they're brilliant. And you literally just put it in front of you, push the handles together, or push them apart, and then the leaves pick up and drop them, and you can just move them side by side.
Yeah, that looks pretty useful.
It's the same thing with weeds. I mean, you know, we know that there are like the blowtorch things that are out there, but there's also long-handled weed pullers that you can use.
Right.
So I would always say as well to people, when they're in a garden centre, they're wandering around thinking about what tool to buy, look for what you're going for, pick it up, and then walk around the garden centre with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That way you can feel the weight, you can feel if it's going to be
so
comfortable.
So you're comfortable with
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Do a bit on their borders.
Well, you could do, a bit sneakily, maybe prune off a few flowers.
Yeah.
But it's just a great way of getting a feel for the prop for the tool.
Sure. Do you think have you noticed a difference of how many tools there are available now? Or
tools are getting lighter, which is great. So they're definitely getting lighter. Electric tools are really helpful and really handy. It's still a weight issue with a lot of tools. I would say that probably more people are starting to think about it, but they're thinking about it more not necessarily from a disability point of view, but from the fact that we're an aging population, and unfortunately as you get older, you know, your back might go, your knees might go, whatever it might be.
Yeah, that dexterity, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think they're thinking more from that side.
Yeah.
But it's just about trying to adapt what's currently there and then just reusing it in a way that suits you.
Yeah.
So it's always difficult to say this is the tool you must use.
Yeah.
Because for someone who can't grip or can't twist their body, it's going
to
be no good.
And it's different to someone else.
Everyone's different anyway.
How about, before we move on to Gardener's World, which we hope to get some gossip on, what about on the patio, though? Have you got some recommendations there? Because I don't know if you've seen the veggie pod and the veg trunk.
Yeah.
They look really great for the less able-bodied.
They are. So I've got one where literally, because this is always sometimes a lot of problem with raised beds. So people automatically assume, you know, someone in a wheelchair, for example, let's put raised beds in. Raised beds are fine if someone can twist their body.
Yeah.
But if they can't, all they can do is... you know, work at the side with one hand. So sort of little tables or veggie trunks or whatever it might be that you can literally wheel yourself under.
You need to be able to get the chair under
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And then you can just plant away, do whatever you want. Okay, you haven't got the depth to grow, you know, big plants, but it's, you know, they're deep enough, especially some of the ones that sometimes drop to a little bit deeper in the back.
Yeah.
You can grow a wide range of things in there, from edibles to florals. Yeah, I think they are great. There's also wonderful things like stacking systems that you can use. Vertical walls are brilliant as well, at a certain height, obviously. But vertical walls are a brilliant way for people, especially if they can't lean forward or bend, because the plants are there at a manageable height.
Yeah.
And it's especially if they grow herbs or, you know, strawberries or things like that, they can just go out there and pick them. And even sort of pots that are on wheels, you know, pots on wheels are brilliant because you can just move them around very, very easily.
Yes.
Obviously, lifting up a pot full of soil and full of a plant can be heavy. I always say that if someone is planting up a pot, then it's always best to take a bag of compost, leave that on the floor by the side of you.
Yeah.
Decant the soil into a bucket or something, which is manageable for you to hold, because obviously it's hard to lift up a big bag. Put it onto a table, the working table, and then you can move your pot up to bring your plant in. And then if you need help, then you can lower it down with someone's help. But otherwise, things on wheels are brilliant from that point of view.
Super.
So much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah.
I Oh, we have to just do it now, don't we? We're going to talk about Boozy Gone as well.
Hey!
Michael's mentioned the gossip.
Dish the dirt. Yeah. That's a good pun.
Dish the dirt.
Ding dong.
But before we get to any gossip that Mark may or may not impart on us...
Oh, you put a disclaimer out
there. Yeah.
Not responsible.
We've had to sign a contract. How long have you been on the show for?
So this year will be my fourth year. So,
how did you get the gig? Headhunted again, I guess. Well, I've heard he's been headhunted about five times in his career. That is a great strike rate, isn't it?
I put my head above the parapet and I just started writing articles.
Uh-huh.
And one of them went into Gardeners World magazine.
Uh-huh.
One of the researchers saw it, and I think it was a perfect timing in a way, because it was obviously when a big edict came down from the BBC saying we need to broaden the presenter pool. And I sort of ticked the boxes, really, because there I am in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
And it was nerve-wracking to think, crikey, do they really want me on the TV show?
Uh-huh.
But the first thing they asked me to do was Chelsea, and sort of right in at the deep end and do Chelsea.
Wow.
And it was like, crikey, O'Reilly. but since my accident, I say no to nothing, so I always will give everything a go.
Have a go.
You've just
got
to say yes.
If you don't enjoy it, you don't do it. Exactly. You know, and if you do, then it can create opportunities.
Exactly,
so.
That. And I do love it, and it's great because... You know, I'm meeting different people every single time, seeing beautiful places. A lot of the time I'm seeing places when there's no one else around. I feel very privileged to be able to do it.
Yeah.
But it's a lovely job, and everyone from presenters through to producers, to directors, to researchers, they're all really lovely. They've all just welcomed everybody so
much. That's
so
amazing. Well.
Yeah.
Good.
Wow. Yeah.
Really good.
So there's no real dirt, really. We all have a good
giggle.
Yes,
there is. There's always some dirt.
We always have a good giggle. But I think it's a general thing with the horticultural trade, isn't it? Everyone's really nice. Everyone really wants to impart their knowledge and help each other out. Mm. And it's the same on Gardeners World.
Yeah.
It's the same with people like, you know, Carol Klein, you know, has been doing this for years and years and years. She's, you know, we just go to her and she sort of says, yeah, you know, it's no problem at all. This is what needs to be done, or this is the way to pronounce something, or whatever it might be. You know, she's brilliant. And they're all the same, everyone.
But I guess you're only together really around Chelsea coverage and show, because usually you'd film the bits...
Yeah,
individually, wouldn't you?
I mean, a lot of people think, "Oh, you're all on the show. You must all live together, or you
all
be around at the same time."
Like it's some student digs.
Yeah, no, you're right. We only really get together at the events.
So you must be like ships that pass in the night.
It's pretty much like that. Yeah, and then of course, even when we're doing Chelsea, everyone's off doing their different things. Mm-hmm. So we only sort of get like lunchtime. When we might be sitting around.
Yeah. I mean, the show has a massive audience.
It does,
clearly. But I'd love to see some more funky stuff on Gardeners World.
What do you mean by funky?
Sort of kind of like trendy, real gardening, like communities and allotments.
Oh, you said
just like, yeah, bit off. Yeah, I think so. That would be really cool.
What
it would expand
that?
The audience.
But we've said in one of our gossips earlier in the series that we'd like Monty to be gardening in a three-bed semi. Do you know what I mean? Just like, or just, you know, a little bungalow.
Yeah.
Just a small garden, you know, just trying to maintain the rockery, just putting a few geraniums each year. But that's sometimes real gardening.
That is a lot of the time.
And that's how a lot of us garden. And we also have flamingos and wind spinners and solar lights. That's how gardens are.
Yeah,
so
flamingos.
So they need a feature on solar lights.
Don't get me wrong, I think that's a brilliant idea. Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, I notice that more now that I'm on the show, especially when we do Gardeners World Live, for example.
Yeah.
Because you get to really meet who your core audience are.
And they garden in that way.
And they do.
Yeah.
They really do.
Yeah.
And it does hit home, and you sort of think, oh, yeah, maybe we do need to sort of hone in a little bit more.
We're just at this point, I think, where young people are so passionate about the environment, you know, and... You know, the whole climate change thing and being connected with plants for well-being, like all of that's happening right now. And we need to, like, the media have a responsibility to kind of capture those people. Do you know what I mean? And provide them with, you know, knowledge and education and inspiration for what they can do with plants.
Yeah.
And so I think that bit is what we need to nail.
You'll be interested to know then. So this year, I'll be looking primarily at mental health and gardening.
Brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we got the teaser. Brilliant. We got the exclusive.
We got it.
We're gonna get it.
You heard it here.
That's cool.
That's really perfect. Good to hear.
Right. Yeah. End the podcast there. We got what we need, Ellen. Let's get our coats.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, that's really great news, though.
That is really good news, yeah.
But you're busy all the time, it sounds like. But you've got a new book that you're putting together as well. Is it released?
It's coming out in September this year. So it's currently being translated into German and Italian. So there'll be a German, Italian and English edition and then American edition. Coming out in September and it's on the Royal Gardens of the World.
Oh, we can't wait to come to the launch event.
During this podcast, that Michael has invited us to your garden for tea and to the launch of your
book. I am networking.
He has no shame.
So the Royal Gardens, that's cool.
It's been a brilliant one to do. I was just saying to someone, I did a quick tot up of the number of people I sort of researched, and it's about 11,000 people that I researched.
Oh my gosh.
And then 21 gardens that will appear, and it's from the UK all the way over to Bali.
Wow.
Oh, really?
So it's all over the place, and some of them are gardens, some of them are water gardens.
That's cool.
So it's a nice mix, and each garden tells its own story.
Mm.
So one might be about the history, whereas another one might be about the main protagonist, whereas another one might be the fact that they've been restoring it for the last 5 years, and it's very much on the restoration work.
So kind of interesting.
Garden is slightly different.
So you can kind of read the story behind the garden. I love that. Yep. I love going into a garden and, you kind of get your own feel from it. And you might even, you kind of think you know the story, but then when you really read about it or learn about it, you're like, oh, I get that. I connect with it more now.
Very much. And the most fascinating thing, which I was unaware of, is how many women are really behind a lot of the large royal gardens around the world.
Yes.
Everyone always sort of says, Versailles, Louis XIV sort of thing.
Yeah.
But they forget that actually it's a lot of women who are actually the main instigators and about the way that gardens should be looking and the way it should be planted up.
Go women in horticulture.
There you go. Put that on a t-shirt.
Thank you so much
for
coming on the podcast. It's been really interesting. And Joe as well. Thank you very much for being here. Yeah. I will definitely be purchasing your new book.
Thank you very much.
And of course, our listeners will be able to see you on Garden as well, too.
They would.
Yeah.
So,
looking forward to the new season.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks. Brilliant. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Hello.
All right, how are you?
I'm all right.
Is that a double bed?
Pardon?
Is that a double bed? It looks like a single.
It's a double bed, yeah.
Really?
I'd just like to confirm I'm not in the double bed. It's just
No, you're just on top, obviously.
I'm sitting on the bed,
In a WFH moment. You know what that is? You know what that is or not? It's a buzzword.
Oh, what was it?
WFH. Work from home.
Work from home. Oh, sorry, yeah. It's a work from home moment. So Webb, my husband, is in the other room on a call, and I figured if I was sitting through there, he'd hear me and I'd hear him, and therefore that would be really annoying. So one of the new kind of things that you've got to think about is actually taking your calls apart, and so I'm sitting on the bed.
Well, I'm used to it because, especially when we were in New York, Rafael and I, we would be both working at home, and this is like an apartment that's almost like a studio apartment, so you really couldn't find your own area to... it's like, what am I going to do? Hide behind the curtain? It's really weird. Oh, you've got a cute little jumper on. What is that?
Oh, thank you. Do you like it? Let me move the camera a little bit.
Is it sage? Like, what the hell is it?
I don't think it's sage. It's just leaves of some description.
They look like leaves off a miracle berry plant.
I don't really know, but they're very tropical, I guess. They're sort of tropical.
Yeah, it's like they're gripping your tip.
I don't know what to say.
Do you think I'll get a prize at the end of the year for putting the podcast into X-rated section the most often? Sorry.
You are always getting told off for that anyway, so
I'm so sorry.
I'm really pleased that you like my top. I love your scarf.
Oh, cool. My scarf.
Yeah, I love your scarf.
Ellen is repeating back to me a joke that I told her last week. How to explain that? Well, right, okay, I'm a boy, yeah? Yeah?
Yeah.
And Ellen and I had a discussion about how women just randomly compliment each other with no real grounding. I think they just feel, as humans, they have to compliment each other on something.
It's important.
So they'll kind of walk into a room and they'll randomly say, oh, I love your scarf. It's like, chances are they're not wearing a scarf, but they're just saying this automatic kind of like, I love your scarf.
I don't know what
girls... I love what you've done with your hair.
I don't know what girls you hang out with. But like,
boys don't do that. If they only say something if they mean it.
My girlfriends only say something if they mean it. I'll have you
That's
know.
What you think.
But I really thought that they liked my scarves.
Yeah, well.
Where are you at the moment, anyway? Where are you?
I'm just staying in an Airbnb in Windsor for a few weeks, actually, because, as ever, I'm deliciously homeless. But I kind of got myself, like, I'm doing some work in the QVC studios in a very kind of pared-down environment, but kind of in between, I'm kind of being quite responsible for my own movements, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I don't mean... movements.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. We needed to know.
So yeah, but I mean, it's funny because before we spoke on the phone, I was like thinking, oh, I feel a bit like grumpy and down. But then when you do speak to people, it is really important, isn't it? You know, and
so much.
I don't know.
It really is. When I was here in America when we first moved here, I had to spend a lot of time on my own. And I actually love time on my own. I'm so used to it.
Yeah.
And I get work done or I go out and adventure and I like it. But there gets to a point, there's just a point where you sort of like a little bit like what you were saying just before, you just get to this point where you actually can't be bothered to talk to anyone, which is so wrong. Because when you do, you realize how important that actual interaction is. Like, it is so important for us as humans to just keep in contact. So even though we're not like in the same space, just seeing each other, because we're currently Skyping, and you know, like having this interaction as best that we can given the circumstances, that is so important for your mental health well-being. So don't put me off next time.
But I think at the moment people are really embracing video calls as well, and it's funny, last night a friend that I often stay with, like, we'd never video called before, but it felt like a really natural thing to do. It's quite nice. I think it's going to break down some human barriers.
I hope so. I mean, out of all of these kind of things which are going to be hard, and we don't want to talk about it forever in this gossip, do we? Because we really want to, like, you know, try and cheer everybody up. But it is really important that when bad things happen or hard things happen, there is always some real good that comes from it. And I genuinely do think that that will happen when this is all controlled and over.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You know. Well, you did, you got your veggie pod to keep you busy, haven't you?
Yes, so let's talk about the veggie pod, shall we? So, obviously, I'm over here without my allotment, without a garden, without the community garden, and, you know, and I do feel really isolated, you know, genuinely, like, from friends. I know that not necessarily back in the UK that you can even see everybody, but I do feel, like, far away. And, you know, my saviour is gardening, like, and growing your own food, and that's what I do. Is like, every day is my whole life, like most people who are listening here. And I've got a balcony, so the amazing folks over at Veggie Pod have sent me a small veggie pod. So I've got the medium one down at the allotment, which my friends are taking care of, and I've got this small one on my balcony. And honestly, when I filled that up with compost yesterday, I could have cried. I didn't, but I was so
compost on your hands.
I was so excited. Yeah. So I've got some awesome seeds, some heirloom seeds from Baker Creek Seeds. I've been to the garden centre, which is one of the few places still open, thankfully. And I've got some more seeds. I've got some, like, strawberry plants and some tomatoes. And I've got some pots to go on the balcony. So, you know, I'm still going to be keeping my hand in with gardening for sure. And I'm going to try and think of some kind of innovative, different ways to do some gardening indoors too. So I always think that sometimes in these circumstances, when you're forced to do something, after you've got over the shock of what's happening, it can actually really make you get creative. It makes you think about what you're doing. It may give you a little bit of time, you know, to actually think outside of the box. And I love that. So I'm kind of like, you know, up for doing some different stuff.
Oh, definitely. Well, do you know what the irony is? Kind of, I'm always so busy and I'm always like praying for gaps in my diary to then do more of the planning work and the things that I never get around to.
Yeah.
You know, suddenly, oh, blimey, I've got no excuse.
You got to do it. You got all the time.
You know, within a few weeks, I should be like, you know, well on it. Up to date, everything, hell.
Yeah.
But do you know what I have got a kit of?
What?
I've spoken to Mad Millie. I don't know if you know these guys. They do a lot of fermentation kits.
Right, okay.
And obviously, Ellen, you know I'm always going on about kefir.
Uh-huh. Don't I just...
The only thing I can talk about at parties.
Don't...
I've actually got a career.
Gosh, how did you do that? A kefir kit. Okay.
Just have to let milk go mouldy.
Oh, God. This is
and
so
you strain
disgusting.
It or something. But this one might interest you as a vegan.
Uh-huh. What's this?
Kombucha
kit. That's awesome.
Which is obviously like fermented tea, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's cool. There's also one where you make coconut yogurt, but I don't know how that works even.
Coconut yogurt. But like these are the kind of things that you never really get time to do. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So actually, it's, you know, making the most and being as positive as you possibly can be, and just being like, you know, creative and doing the stuff that you weren't doing before. That's pretty cool. I've got to admit though, this morning I did think my world might end when I realised that my Marmite had almost run out. All of the things that, you know, you think you'll miss, or you think, you know, that you would want if you were shut in. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? How am I going to live without Marmite?
Well, you know what? Not to, like, labour the point of the kind of stockpiling and stuff like that, but when I went to the supermarket on Saturday night, I was astounded, because it's sometimes you see it in the news, and then when you see it in real life, you're like, no, that really is.
Yeah.
It was in the news.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes they can make things look different to what they are, you know?
Sure, totally.
But it really was like that. But do you know what was brilliant? Because I'm always buying all the weird, unusual foods, of course, they were still in stock. So I was absolutely happy. I was, like, buying all this, like, weird stuff.
This weird, like, random stuff. Lucky me.
Really cool.
The supermarkets here have really been fine until the last couple of days. Apart from exactly the same as in the UK, like toilet rolls and all of that kind of stuff has gone. But obviously, I mean, this is an amazing place of plant-based eating. And obviously the vegans hadn't quite got the call to go and stockpile. So there was tons of vegan food. And I was like really kind of cocky about it. So I was going, it's okay, no problem at all. You know, we'll go shopping another day because there's loads of food there for us. And then we got there like really laid back this afternoon. It's like... nothing there. Nothing there. So anyway, that was interesting. So somebody who I know posted, Joe Robinson, a friend of mine, posted on Facebook recently all of the plant alternatives to toilet roll. So, you know, if everyone ran out of toilet roll, what would we use? And it was like all of the plants that kind of, you know, where the foliage is sort of like fluffy or velvety.
Yeah.
There was like lamb's ears. And I can't remember what else. There was mint. So you have a minty fresh bottom.
I think that would go through your fingers pretty quickly.
I know. So I was like, I don't know what a brilliant one that you could use at the moment was a red dead nettle, because there's loads of it about outside. And obviously it's not really a nettle. It doesn't sting you. And it's like antibacterial, anti-inflammatory, antifungal. So that's amazing. And I was like, oh, I've got a great one. How about red dead nettle? And then I was like, ew. Because that could get really messy.
Do you
messy.
Know what a really good one is? And what? I think it's been released since the book was made, is Senecio Angel Wings.
Okay.
Because that is it's a kind of relatively solid leaf, but it's also soft surfaced.
Yeah.
And it's quite big. It's kind of hand sized.
So you can just place
really perfect.
Place it on your hand. Yeah. See the things. It's the things
this
that
is
plants
like
can
toilet paper fantasy leaf.
Plants can provide so very much.
Are we done yet? I want to watch Hollyoaks.
Hang on. Let's just stop here for a moment, okay? You're like self-isolating in a practical sense, and we haven't chatted for a few days, and now you have a time to chat with me. You want to drop me for Hollyoaks?
Oh yeah.
Well,
I want to start making my kombucha.
Oh, I've got nothing else to say to you then.
Emagum. Yeah, well. Well, enjoy your microgreens.
Yeah, thanks. I'm going to have lots of them.
That's cool. But they're so good for you because they're so, undiluted.
They're nutrient dense and there's more...
Dense, that's the word.
Yeah, there's more nutrition in like a 10-centimetre shoot than there is in the actual fully mature vegetables. So
exactly.
It's a brilliant
one.
If
you eat micro shoots, you never eat real vegetables again.
Excuse me, both would be
you
great.
Would never eat adult vegetables again.
Only adult eat vegetables. The young ones. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, if you know, have got a packet of seeds and you haven't got a garden and you want something really quick, microgreens are the way to go. I probably should take a photo right now of the screen because Michael has his beanie hat on, like is the current thing, and his very
like
long
from Christmas past.
Yeah, he looks slightly interesting. Can I take a picture of it stop recording? What do you think?
I don't know, babe.
I think I'll wait, just in case. But
if you screw it up, you've only got yourself in the bag.
Your hair is flying, like, out of the side.
I know.
You know? Anyway. Okay, so well, it's been very nice chatting with you.
Wonderful. Yes, we are on 15 minutes, and you tell me gossips need to be brief.
Well, this is around about 15 minutes, but I think before we go, we should tell everybody what's going on at the moment with regards to releases and stuff, things coming up. We're currently posting an episode each evening of a gardening TV show that we've done.
Oh yes,
aren't we? Which is really cool. So that
it's really cool. It was like a live show, which like a hybrid between Top Gear and Gardener's World.
Yeah,
with little game show elements, kind of cool presentations, live studios, Top of the Pops as well.
Yeah, so go check them out because that will keep you entertained for sure. Mm-hmm. And the podcast is still carrying on. We've got plenty of episodes already in the bag for series 3, so they'll continue to be released every other week. And then within those every other week, Michael and I are going to do a podcast, carry on doing our kind of gossips and getting people involved online,
you
bit
can
of interaction.
Say it, Ellen.
What can I say? What can I say?
You can say what you were going to say.
What was
don't
I going to say? Well, I don't know what you think I was going to say. What was I going to say? I don't know. Anyway.
What are we doing for next weekend? We got a really cool new episode that we might do more than once where people can play along at home.
Oh, I'd forgotten about that. I wasn't going to say that. I forgot.
We're excited about it.
You tell everyone about that.
Well, I don't want to give too much away, but next week the podcast will be like a kind of quiz that you can play along with at home. So it's going to be really fun. We're just working out how to do it in the right way. But we will obviously read out a variety of exciting questions about the plant-based world, and then you'll be able to take part on a nifty little web page.
Yay.
And if you win, then we'll congratulate you.
No, yeah, you know, you don't get anything else but congratulations from us.
You get a personal congratulations message from us.
Yeah, we'll do a recorded message for you. How about that?
Yeah.
Brill. Okay.
Cool.
I can tell that Michael is desperate. I can tell Michael's desperate to watch Hollyoaks. He's kind of like moving around, sort of not really paying any attention to me. He keeps looking away at the TV. Personally, I think he quite likes his own company more than he lets on.
On as well.
Yeah, a little bit Hollyoak looking there. All right then, dude. Hey,
cool.
super nice chatting with you.
Lovely to chat.
Everybody stay safe and, you know, keep on talking. And gardening.
Cool. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Natural Grower. Launched in 2019, their award-winning liquid fertilizer and soil conditioner is made entirely from maize. Naturally rich in nitrogen, potash, phosphate, and other trace elements that plants and vegetables love, it is approved by the Soil Association, Vegan Society, and Organic Farmers and Growers. Visit naturalgrower.co.uk to nurture your soil and boost your plants and veg. Enter PBP15 for a 15% discount as a PBP subscriber.
Thanks for listening. You should now be at least 25% more obsessed by plants.
Please follow us on social media. You'll find us by typing in the Plant-Based Podcast.
We also have a fabulous website. Go to theplantbasedpodcast.net.
So tell your friends, leave a review. Why not write a letter to your local MP? Please spread the word about the Plant-Based Podcast.
Oh yes, see you next time, plant friends.